Excision number 10420, reel 2.
Colonel W.I. Watson, reel 2. You said that you went to Fenham Barracks in November 1926, Colonel.
Yes, that's
who
correct.
Who was the commanding officer of the
barracks? The commanding officer was a Major Turner in the regiment, whose nickname was Little Man Turner. And we reported on the Monday morning at 12 o'clock, as we'd been directed to do. And he said to us straight away, or said to me, "Why didn't you come yesterday?" And I said, "Sir, we were told to come at 12 o'clock midday today." And he said, "Oh, well, I wanted you to come yesterday so you could start first thing on Monday morning your training." Anyhow, by 2 o'clock that afternoon, we were in denims and with rifles, and were being drilled on the square, the barrack square, with a squad of recruits. We lived in the mess, of course.
Sorry, can I just jump in before we go any further? Do you know the full title of the company or the battalion at Fenham?
No, it wasn't. It was the depot, the training depot of the regiment, and it was also the depot of the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, and there was also a field regiment there, which of artillery, which of course was horsed. And we, for the first fortnight, we did recruit training just like any other recruit, fired on the ranges, drilled, and by the permanent staff. And amongst other things too, we had to do PT, and we had to run round the town more, Newcastle town more. I'm not sure that Rodham, who was a very good athlete, I'm not sure he didn't win the race round the town more. It was in November, and of course, you've got to remember, it was pretty cold. Now, the little man Turner, knowing that I was quite keen on shooting and fishing, he used to say at night when I used to come, we all assembled for dinner, "Oh, Watson, can you tell me the difference between an old partridge and a young partridge?" And I used to say, "Yes, sir, it's a question of the colour of their legs." And if he wasn't dining in on any particular night, the other officers, regular, and all said, "Oh, Watson, can you tell us the difference between an old partridge and a young partridge?" This joke went on practically the whole of the time I was there. Now, the depot subaltern was a young fellow called Terence Airy, and he, in fact, became General Sir Terence Airy and the Colonel of the Regiment after the war. And during the course of the war, he came up to my battalion headquarters one night, one bright moonlight night, and I walked Terence Airy right round all my positions in the Alamein line. It seemed a long time since he was the depot subaltern. Now, on one occasion, I should perhaps say that Lord Barnard insisted that none of his officers carried canes or walking sticks. And I don't think he liked us to have gloves, but on no account were we to have canes or walking sticks. He said that we used them for flicking off buttercups, and that's all. And, of course, when we went to the depot, we had to have canes. And on one occasion, in the second half of our tour of duty there, I was drilling a squad on the barrack square, and I had my cane seemingly the wrong way round, the knob at the back instead of the front. And Terence Airy came right across the parade ground, the depot subaltern, and says, the little man says, will you put your cane the right way round under your arm? Anyhow, that was what our training was like at Fenham Barracks, which of course is now no more.
Did you do any route marching?
We had to march about the barrack square. The recruits were frightfully good. They realized that we were three very young officers, and one would always whisper to me, it's your turn to move, sir, you move, sir, while the sergeant was drilling. And of course, too, you were put at one end of this vast barrack square to shout your commands, and the sergeant close to the squad would probably tell them not to move, to make me or Ronnie Rodham or Norman Kyle shout a bit louder. But that was the sort of pre-war training. We used to run on Saturday afternoons with the Newcastle Beagles and take exercise there, as did quite a lot of the other officers.
And how long did this particular training take?
We were there a month.
Full time?
Full time, oh yes. We lived there. Oh Lord, yes. We lived there for the whole month. And it was a compulsory. As it is today, I think, when the officers join, they've got to do a certain amount of training.
Did you do training with weapons while you were there?
With rifles, yes. I think we did probably bayonet practice. In fact, I'm sure we did. And on the miniature range.
Did you have any anti-gas precautions in training?
Oh, no. None. The gas was never thought of in those days. No. We had no gas. It was just the preliminary soldiers' training before going to the regiment.
What was the accommodation like that you were living in?
We were in pretty bleak officers' quarters, just a bed and a washstand and that sort of thing. Nothing elaborate. And we had to... lived in the mess. But we had to be out on parade just with all the other recruits at the particular time of the parade.
Now, what was the food like?
Oh, it wasn't bad at all in those days. No. Oh, no. No.
So at the end of the month, you come back to your work, of course.
Yes, yes.
And to training with the Territorial Battalion.
Yes. Well, now, I could tell you what the annual program, really, of a Territorial Battalion was. There was little done in the winter. And you started in April, I think, or the end of March, and you had to do a month, a drill a night, a week, one drill a night a week. If you were keen and enthusiastic, you did more, you did two. Now, I was article clerk in Darlington, and I used to catch a bus from Darlington, change in my office in Darlington into uniform, catch a bus to Bishop Auckland, and then after the drill was over, I would come back to Barnard Castle by bus until I got a car. And then you had these drill nights. I was then, as I say, Bishop Auckland headquarter company, and there was then no company here in Barnard Castle. After the war, the company here was abandoned.
It's the First World War.
First World War, yes. And we then would have to do a weekend rifle training, shooting on the Whitburn rifle ranges. And we'd probably have a second weekend or even a third weekend at that to get everybody classified. Perhaps they couldn't all come the first time, and so they'd have to come a second time later on in the year. And then we would have a brigadier's inspection. I mean, the whole battalion would be on parade, and we would do it on I think the football field at Bishop Auckland or in Raby Park. Of course, we had a band, and a battalion band, a very good one it was. And then we would do the annual training, which took place for a fortnight at either Ripon, Catrick, or Redcar. In 1931, we did in fact go to Halton in Lancashire. In 1932, there was no camp, and officers were encouraged to go on regular army courses. It was the signal officer would go perhaps to the signals at Catrick. And then finally, but towards the end of the year, there would be a tactical exercise without troops for the officers run by the division. And in 1934, we had a tute on the divisional tute took place in France, and we who attended it were required to pay the difference between air and sea and land travel. We left Croydon Aerodrome, and on the Friday we flew to Paris, where we had a splendid wild night in Paris. And we had to take dinner jackets. We had to wear dinner jackets. And I always think Folies Bergères, or wherever it was we went, realized that we were a party of army officers. Somehow I think they got to know it. And next morning, on the Saturday morning, we went out to Soissons. And we were billeted in the Lyon Rouge and Macquarie, some other place, Lyon Rouge, I think I was in, hotels. And we went out to study and studied the crossings of the Marne and Aisne by Brigadier General Hunter Bunter Weston. And the divisional commander, who was General Herbert, directing this exercise, was actually the adjutant of the Fusiliers in Hunter Bunter Weston's brigade. And he showed us, he said, I ran down this little track to get in touch with the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry. And then on the way back, I think we went to the Chemin des Dames, came back to Paris and flew home on the Tuesday midday, and we used Lancing Chapel of Lancing College on the Sussex Downs as a guiding mark to get us back to Croydon. I always remember the plane seemed to me to be going so slowly when we left Croydon Airport, because there was a hare running alongside the airplane, and it was undoubtedly going quicker than any of the Scylla. It was a Scylla biplane with four engines belonging to Imperial Airways. But it was a splendid toot. To this day I can see where old Hunter Bunter, in pouring wet weather, took his brigade down the lane and got them across the River Aisne, realising that the Germans had shot their mark in 1914. You could, of course, oh, another thing too, which of course took place in the winter, was our splendid football team. We won the Territorial Army Football Championship at that period 5 times in 7 years. And I know I went on one occasion with the team and the adjutant to Rhyl to play the Welsh Fusiliers. And Colonel Watkins, Sir Watkin William Wynne, who was the colonel of the battalion or the regiment, gave us port in midday, which was almost too much for me and the adjutant at the time. Now, officers, as I say, were encouraged to go on courses, particularly in 1932 when there was no camp. Now, I went then, in 1932, instead of going to camp, to an attachment to a brigade headquarters in Catrick while they were training. I cannot remember the brigade, but I remember two regiments in it. One was a battalion of Lancashire Fusiliers, and one was a battalion of East Yorks. And I remember out on training one night, a bugle being blown, and you could hear it all around the training area, and the brigadier saying to me, "You're a light infantry, what's that bugle blowing?" And I said, "It's the stand fast, sir." And so it was the end of the exercise. And that's all I can remember about that attachment. I can remember also an earlier attachment when I was very newly joined, going for a fortnight on training again with the horse gunners at Catrick. They were a field regiment, but they were all, of course, horsed. And I had to ride just like everybody else did. It finished rather disastrously because I got to the end, but I fell off and gave my face a nasty smash, a nasty scar. But that's what you were encouraged to do, go on short courses or long courses at Catrick.
Did you, in your training with the territorials, have much opportunity to train with other arms of the services? I'm thinking of...
When we were once in camp at Catrick, we trained with tanks. They were very primitive tanks, of course. But we did train with tanks then, yes. There'd be always certain tanks would be if we went to Catrick, but not if we went anywhere else.
You didn't get opportunity to do any liaison with the RAF, for example, in any exercises of that kind?
No, not pre-war. No, none at all.
Do you mind if I just look at one or two of the more details of training? Square training, when you were doing your basic square training, was this always at infantry, light infantry pace?
Yes, always at light infantry pace. Yes, rather.
And the fitness training, you say you had to do PE. Back in headquarter company, did you have regular fitness training?
No, I don't know. We never did much fitness training. You had to get the chaps trained to drill before they went to camp. No, we didn't.
Well, weapon training, rifle, obviously.
Yes.
Bayonet.
Yes.
Any other weapons did you get the opportunity to train with?
Yes. Subsequently, after I joined some time afterwards, we became very involved with machine guns. And would have to take the machine guns, the ordinary Vickers, old-fashioned Vickers, Vickers guns, to Whitburn. And I remember I was involved with that. And we had to do a certain amount of extra training while we were in camp, the drill of loading a Vickers gun with the belt and firing it. And then we had to do it on the Whitburn ranges, and of course we had to do the Bren gun. But the Bren didn't come until very much later.
And did you have any experience with anti-tank weapons?
Nope. Not in those days.
So that you really have to become as proficient at these weapons as your men?
Yes. I remember, I can remember firing the machine gun at Whitburn, particularly because a whole lot of sheep ran across the range just as we were all in the middle of doing it. Yes.
What was the composition of the headquarters company?
Well, we had signalers and buglers, and we had the stretcher bearers and all that sort of personnel.
And how many would be total?
I can't remember now. Over 100. No?
Do you recall your first commanding officer at headquarters company?
Was I?
do you recall your first commanding officer at Headfort Quarters? Who was in command when you went there?
No, Walker, I think it was. A chap called Walker.
So you started with Headquarters Company. What was the next move?
Then,
am I jumping?
Yeah, but no, you're not jumping the gun. I then went and became a captain eventually, and I got D Company at Crook.
About what time was this?
It would be in the 30s, of course. I was commanding D Company. We'll get there in a minute. Commanding D Company when war was brewing up. Now, there was one other rather interesting event during this period in 1937. Jack Curry and myself were the two officers that took the battalion party to His Majesty's coronation had to lie in the streets. Now, we took, I think, roughly 20, 25 or 30 chaps, and we had to line the Regent Street. We were encamped in Primrose Hill in Regent's Park, and we marched from there and took up our positions in Regent Street. I was standing, I think, almost opposite Austin Reed's, with our backs very nearly behind our backs on Garrard's, the Crown Jewellers. We travelled on the Friday night. Mercifully, we didn't have any colours, of course, and we wore green uniform as opposed to the blue of all the other troops. We travelled to London on the Friday afternoon and all through the night, and then I remember in the carriage was Jack Curry, Colonel Miller, who was going to be in the procession, the CO at the time, and Major Philip Pease, who lived down the road here, was a great friend of mine, was in the Northumberland Yeomanry, and he was going to be on parade. And we all travelled through the night to Primrose Hill Camp in Regent's Park. We were advised to, Jack Curry and I were advised to go and see the positions where we were going to stand the night before, which we duly did. And they were absolutely in the exact place where we eventually did stand. And at 8 o'clock on the Saturday morning, we all marched, the whole division contingent marched all the way from Primrose Hill to Regent Street. And we marched to Piccadilly Circus, sort of ate our tails, and one half went up one side, and we went up the other. Behind us were a row of policemen, of course, and behind that the huge crowd, an enormous crowd, quite unbelievable, the crowd. And of course, Regent Street was all clear and sanded and all absolutely perfect for the purpose of the procession. Now, the procession was made up of every colony's contingent, from the Canadian Mounted Police, who were, I reckon, the best, to the Australians that sat down round the lampposts and smoked cigarettes that were thrown to them by the crowd. I mean, all you'd got to do was to put your hand up when you were marching down and you'd get a cigarette. They came down just like snow. And we were in green, and the whole crowd in Regent Street started to sing "Does Your Mother Come From Ireland?" because I think they thought we were Irish troops from Ireland. Up to 1 o'clock, you could go spend a penny and go and rest for a moment or two. And Jack Curry and I went to Bow Street Police Station. and there were all the constables with their helmets upside down and their sandwiches in their helmets, waiting in case they were called upon to keep the crowd back. While we were lining the streets, waiting for the procession, a doctor came up and asked us if we were all right. And the Royal Army Service Corps came down with a lorry with sandwiches for each man. And we all had sandwiches, and I know that some chaps didn't want them, so they handed them back to the people in the crowd, and they thought they were too disgusting and never ate. And then the lorry would come back again, go right round Regent Street up the other side and collect the rubbish, the paper. And all the paper was put into the lorry and then it disappeared. But apropos of going and resting and spending a penny, a party of gunners were marched down Regent Street to the loos in Piccadilly Circus. And I always remember hearing one chap say, "There goes the gunners' watering party." But after 1 o'clock, we had to stand, couldn't move. And the procession, the head of this huge procession, passed us and went up and stopped about Oxford Circus. It was wireless, it was from the abbey to the head of the procession to start moving. The whole thing was that the procession must never stop after it had started to move. Now, one of the other rather interesting things was that I had a great friend who was the commanding officer of the Northumberland Hussars, Colonel Bertie Vaux. And there I was standing out in Regent Street with this huge procession passing, and all the COs of the yeomanry, mounted of course, all came trotting past. And good gracious, I said to Bertie as he trotted past, "Good gracious, fancy seeing you here out in..." "Yes," he said, "by God, my bottom sore," as he trotted past in Regent Street. Of course, he and I, nobody else could hear, the noise was cheering and cheering, it was terrific. And, of course, the party, your party, part of your party on the other side of the road was supposed to hear you give commands, of course. Well, they weren't immediately opposite. Regent Street on a bend meant that they were echelon back a bit. And all they could do, of course, was to watch what we did on the other side of Regent Street.